Okay, so I'd like to thank the organizers for the chance to speak at this conference. This talk is mostly aimed at the people that aren't string theorists and holographers. I'll mention some recent results and some new results to keep everyone happy, but mostly this talk is going to be reasonably basic. In fact, it doesn't make use of any string theory or ADS-CFT at all. The point of it is kind of to say things about CFTs and show you how, if you're just interested in CFTs, that you will naturally be led to gravitational physics. This diagram summarizes the talk. The point is that we're going to look at CFTs using the lens of quantum information, and then that will naturally show how this anti-de Sitter space physics emerges. So I'm going to get right into it. So obviously this is related to ADS-CFT and all of these recent developments, but the thing to remember here is that we're just trying to see what can we say without actually assuming anything about this correspondence. What can you see just by studying CFTs? Okay, so not sure. Okay, it's a little crisper on my screen, but so we're going to start by remembering that CFTs, these are some continuum quantum systems. And so we'll usually be talking about Lorentzian CFTs, so we'll have some space dimensions and states of those. And this picture is a picture of the spatial part. So this would be, say, a 2D CFT. And given some state of a 2D CFT or a CFT in any number of dimensions, we can pick a spatial subsystem and think about the entropy of that subsystem. So you define the density matrix for the subsystem and then compute the usual von Neumann entropy. And it turns out that this thing, well, it quantifies the entanglement of the fields in that region with the rest of the system. And so we often call it entanglement entropy, but of course it's just entropy. You have to be a little bit careful when you're talking about these continuum field theory systems. When you calculate this, it's typically just infinity. There are a few things, though, that you can calculate starting from that that are finite and regulator independent. So one of the things would be if you... So there are some universal terms. So if I compute, say, this entanglement entropy for a region in the presence of a UV cutoff, there are some cutoff dependent terms, but then there could be, so we could think of this often as some power series. There might be some 1 over epsilon squared term and 1 over epsilon term, but then there could be some log epsilon term and some constant term. So some of these things are universal. I'll give you an example. You can take various derivatives. So if this is like the radius, if R is the radius of this circle, you could take some derivatives with respect to R to pick out these contributions that are more universal. Another thing you can do is take combinations where A and B would be different regions. So you could calculate combinations like the one that calculates mutual information. And in these combinations, often the divergences cancel and you define some regulator independent things. And the next thing that you could do, and that'll come up a bunch in this talk, is to consider some vacuum subtracted quantities. So calculate the entanglement entropy for this region in some state, but subtracting off the entanglement entropy for the same region in the vacuum state. And then again, you can get some finite quantities that way. Okay, so let's start with the absolute simplest thing. If we have a 1+1 dimensional field theory, so just on a line, then one simple quantity we could calculate is the vacuum. So we're going to start with talking about vacuum entanglement. And we're going to see how just pure ADS geometry arises by thinking about that. So we could start by looking at the entanglement entropy of an interval. And so that is a function of this one parameter L that describes the size of the interval. And the answer, which is now pretty famous, is that it's a universal kind of answer. So for any CFT at all in 1 plus 1 dimensions, this is the answer. And so it only depends, the only difference if you had different CFTs would be this overall constant. And it's just the central charge of the CFT. And so an interesting point is that this answer for the entanglement entropy as a function of the size of the interval turns out to also be the answer to a geometry question. And so the geometry question involves a geometry which is one dimension higher than our CFT. So in this is a plane, and the lizards indicate a particular measure of distance on this plane. So this is the measure of distance, which is defined by this metric. Okay, so we're modifying Pythagoras' theorem here. So z is this coordinate up here. And so if this distance down here, the actual distance in this geometry is much larger than the same apparent distance up here. Okay. So this is hyperbolic space. It's a negatively curved two-dimensional space. And so the geometry question that gives the same answer as that field theory question is to consider intervals on this boundary of our hyperbolic space here, okay, so some distance in this x-coordinate, and to ask what is the minimal distance through this geometry from this point to this point, okay, or you know, how do you get from here to here crossing the least number of lizards? And so so the answer turns out to be infinity again, so that matches up nicely. If you introduce in the field theory, we had to introduce a UV cutoff, epsilon, some short distance cutoff, and then the answer was the log of L over the epsilon. Well, here we could do the same thing and introduce a little cutoff, so it's an infinite distance to this boundary. So if we say we're going to start at z equals epsilon and then measure the distance, then the answer is exactly this if we pick the right overall curvature for this hyperbolic space. Okay, so we're more used to thinking about positively curved things. So if you have a sphere, you can basically, there's a one parameter family of spheres. You could have just the size of the sphere. That's your parameter. In negatively curved spaces, there's also a one parameter family of these things. And so by picking that parameter correctly, then you'll match, you can match exactly. Okay. Great. Okay, so you may not be that excited. That log of L is the answer to many questions, so you probably wouldn't be too excited about that matching. So we can say more things, though. In the context of these, we're going to be talking about these conformal field theories. These are Lorentz invariant field theories. They have time. And so sometimes it's useful to think about, in these kinds of theories, you could actually have observers in different reference frames, and they could each be interested in entanglement entropy. And so you might have an observer whose simultaneous events are these ones, and they would ask about the entanglement entropy of that interval. You might have another observable whose simultaneous events are these ones, and they would be interested in the entanglement entropy of that interval. And so thinking about entanglement entropies is really, there's really a larger family once you take into account the possible spatial slices. Okay. So it turns out that previous matching that we had between the field theory question and the geometry question extends to this notion of entanglement entropies for different slices. So it turns out that if you look at the vacuum state of a 2D CFT, and you ask about the entanglement entropy of any of these, any interval on any slice, then it will match with a curve in a certain Lorentzian geometry. Okay, so now we've added on the geometry side, we've added this time direction, and we've added a metric, which is Lorentzian. And so the entanglement entropy of that interval is equal to the area, or the length, sorry, of a curve that extremizes area in this geometry. Okay, so there's actually a space-time thing. And so this geometry, it's not just that hyperbolic space times time. It's what we call a warped product. So this 1 over z appears in front of the dt squared as well. But this defines anti-de Sitter space-time in 3 dimensions. Okay, so again, the correspondence is that for higher central charge CFTs, we have to choose one of these anti-de Sitter space-times with a lower curvature in order to get the matching to work. Okay. Next, we can think about more general dimensions. And it turns out that this same kind of thing works even if we go to 2-dimensional CFTs or 3-dimensional CFTs and so forth. So what we need to do there is to say, well, how do we generalize an interval? And what we're going to do is think about a ball-shaped region. So we want to think of that interval as actually being just a 1-dimensional ball. And the higher dimensional thing that we're going to look at is a 2-dimensional ball or a 3-dimensional ball. And so it turns out that the entanglement entropy for these ball-shaped regions in general dimensional CFTs is universal also in the same way. It only depends, so you could have all sorts of different CFTs, and the entanglement entropy for ball-shaped regions only depends on one overall parameter. Okay, so there's some formula that generalizes this log L over epsilon with the C in front. Now there's another formula, and there's still just one constant in front that characterizes that you need to choose depending on what CFT you're talking about. Okay, but the thing works out the same way. The answer to that entanglement entropy, again, it matches with the area of now not some curves but some surfaces in a geometry. Again, it's a Lorentzian geometry. It's just the higher dimensional version of this anti-de Sitter space, and there's the parameter in front. Okay, so you can always get ball entanglement entropies for field theories to match with geometries. Okay. All right. So you're probably not that. You wouldn't be that excited again about just that matching. So you might wonder then. Well, what if we had not the vacuum state, but some state that is close to the vacuum state? Okay. So I take my state. It's the vacuum state plus some perturbations. Is it still possible to represent entanglement entropies using geometry? Okay, so can I come up with some modification of this anti-de Sitter space geometry, so add some perturbation to it, so it's no longer a nice symmetric space? So this would be a perturbation that depends on what state I'm talking about. Can I actually find such a perturbation so that the areas in this geometry match with the entanglement entropies for this state, for all the regions? Okay. Okay, so it's going to turn out that the answer is yes. But let me sort of give you a sense of how that works. So one of the special things about these ball-shaped regions is that if you ask about what does the density matrix look like for that ball-shaped region, then it actually has a thermal form for any CFT. Okay, so if you define this operator in the CFT, which is just the integrated stress energy tensor over the ball with some weighting factor, this function x goes to 0 at the edges. There's some specific function x. Okay, so here's an operator in the CFT, and the claim is that the density matrix for a ball-shaped region takes this form. So this is the vacuum density matrix. Okay, so the fact that this has this form actually tells us, we can use that to show that entanglement entropy for small perturbations has a particular structure. And we're just going to use the first law of thermodynamics. Okay. So the first law of thermodynamics says if you have a state which is thermal, okay, so here the temperature is just set to 1 and this is our Hamiltonian. So in general, the first law of thermodynamics would say that the variation of the entropy would be equal to 1 over T times the variation of the expectation value of the Hamiltonian. That's sort of a quantum version of the first law. So we're going to apply that in this case, and it tells us that if we have any perturbation to our vacuum state, then the variation of the entanglement entropy for this ball-shaped region, it's actually related to the variation of the stress tensor expectation value. Okay, so to first order, if I know what the energy density is everywhere, the quantum expectation value of the energy density, I can actually figure out what the entanglement entropy is. Okay, so that is a bit of CFT physics. It's just a statement about entanglement entropies for ball-shaped regions when I perturb around the vacuum state. This is just always true for any CFT. Okay. So we're going to use that then so still in the CFT, if I look at a really little ball, what it tells me is that the perturbation of entanglement entropy for a really little ball is going to be determined by the energy density at that point. Okay, so the previous one, it was an integral over the whole ball, but if the ball is really small, that's only involving the energy density at one point. Okay. So another CFT statement is that the variation of entanglement entropy for a little ball is the same thing as the expectation value of the energy density. And then we can use the last two things to say that we have, again, for any CFT, that the variation of the entanglement entropy for a big ball, you could rewrite that in terms of the variation of the entanglement entropy for all these little balls. Okay, so that is a CFT statement telling us about how entanglement entropy behaves for perturbations around the vacuum state. Okay. All right, so now we want to ask this question. Okay, can I reproduce these entanglement entropies for all the balls by some geometry? Okay. Well, if I can, it means that there's some geometry where the area of this surface I could figure it out by knowing the area of all these little surfaces ending on the little balls. So this constraint in the CFT, it means that, you know, if there's a geometry that works, the metric over here in the middle of the space-time is related somehow to the metric at the boundary of the space-time. Okay. And the kind of thing that would actually give you such a relation is actually, it's like an equation of motion, something like an equation of motion. So you can do some math and show that the equation of motion that would guarantee that is actually Einstein's equations. Okay. So the statement is, if this ADS plus a metric perturbation calculates the ball entanglement entropies for such a perturbation, then it must be that this space-time, it satisfies Einstein's equations linearized about ADS, where the information that we need to figure out what solution it is comes from this stress energy tensor. Okay, but then actually this is enough. So this is enough to actually figure out what geometry it is. Okay, so we can say so we have actually two statements. Number one is, well, if this works to calculate the entanglement entropy, then it satisfies Einstein's equations. With the asymptotics, with the boundary conditions determined by the field theory stress tensor, but this is actually enough information to completely figure out the solution. Okay, so this allows us to show that you could actually always find such a geometry. Yeah. No. So it's about. So it goes back to this picture. Okay, so we're trying to reproduce entanglement entropies. Yeah. These pictures are just spatial. But what I actually need, so So this thing is a thing is like a non-local constraint that relates some spatial area over here to a bunch of spatial stuff over here. Okay. What I want to do is turn that into some local equation. Okay, this is like the integral form of Maxwell's equations, and I want to turn it into some local equation. But actually to do that, okay, let me yeah, I mean, so if I just look at this one, it basically will give me one component. And to get all the components, I need to look at, and it'll give me one time. So to get all the components and all the times, I need to look at all these different times, apply this relation at all the different times, and apply it on all the different frames of reference. Yeah, so that's kind of how it comes in. All right, so the summary of that, I think I said all of this. So the interesting thing is, you know, we had ADS, we had this nice symmetrical geometry where the areas of surfaces ending on balls in that geometry match with vacuum entanglement entropies from balls in a CFT. Okay. So that you might think is just something about the symmetries of these two problems. What we've seen next is that even if I consider perturbed states, so I take any CFT, I take any perturbation to the vacuum state, I can now give you a recipe to construct a geometry that calculates the entanglement entropy of that perturbed state. The recipe is to calculate the stress energy tensor expectation value, use that information to put some boundary conditions on linearized Einstein equations, solve the equations, and then you find a geometry. And we've also shown that any geometry that correctly calculates the entanglement entropies is that one. Okay. So you have to, so if you're gonna reproduce entanglement entropies with a metric, it actually has to satisfy Einstein's equations. So far we're just at linear order. Okay, so then you might say, well, that's not really gravity because it's just linear. You know, the exciting thing about Einstein gravity is it's this nonlinear. You have this nonlinear physics. That's where all the interesting things. So maybe you haven't really discovered gravity and CFT physics yet. Okay. So we want to ask: does this continue to work? We could just follow this same line of questioning. Can we continue to match CFT entanglement entropies with geometries once we go to, say, second order in perturbations around the vacuum state, or higher orders, or in general? One comment at this point is that it's not likely to work for general states. So even if, suppose I had this state of a CFT, and I could match all of its entanglement entropies by surface areas in this geometry, and I have this state in the CFT, and I could match all of its entanglement entropies by surface areas in this geometry, and now I consider some quantum superposition of these two states. Okay. Well, your geometries are not sitting in a vector space that where we could just naturally superpose them. So there wouldn't be a natural answer to that question in general. And so this is maybe an argument that maybe only certain states in these CFTs would be geometrical enough to have their entanglement entropy reproduced by just areas. Okay. So we can think about, well, what was it that led us to something like Einstein's equations when we were just talking about first-order perturbations? And so somehow the key was that we could actually figure out what the entanglement entropy was for large regions based on some local information. So I told you how, starting with the expectation value of the stress tensor, you could figure out the entanglement entropy for a ball. Okay, and that translated to how entanglement entropy for small balls could give us the entanglement entropy for big balls, and that translated to how the metric at the boundary could give us the metric in the bulk, and that was Einstein's equations. Okay, so to get something like Einstein's equations in when we go to second order perturbations or more general perturbations, we're going to need something like that, where something like local information should be enough for this, whatever class of states it is, to tell us the entanglement entropies for larger regions. Okay, so is there a natural family of states where the entanglement entropy is determined by local data? Okay. So I'm going to tell you about a class of states where that's true. And I want to start by recalling a particular way to define the vacuum state in a field theory. Okay, so one way to define the vacuum state is to start with any state, and then you keep acting with this operator e to the minus epsilon h. Epsilon is some parameter. Okay, so this penalizes you for not being the vacuum state. Okay, so you just start with a superposition of all the possible energy eigenstates, and you act with this, and then the parts that aren't the vacuum get a small coefficient in front relative to the vacuum. You do that enough times, and you end up with a vacuum state. And then in field theory courses, we teach that, well, this operation you can represent using this, you can say that you generate the state using the Euclidean path integral on a half space. Okay. So there's a way of, you can think of a more general class of states where I just do the same thing, except every once in a while I throw in some operator. Okay. So I could sprinkle various operators in there. So altogether, instead of just computing the standard path integral on the half space, so the general thing I could imagine is having, when I do that integral, a bunch of sources for these local operators when I'm actually creating my state. Okay. So for this kind of state, you know, in some sense, we're specifying the state by giving some local functions of space and time. We're kind of putting in as much information to specify the state as we expect there to be in describing a geometry with some other fields. There are more motivations for why a state like this. So in ADS CFT, one can argue a state like this is actually what this exponential is doing. Okay, so this is an ADS CFT aside. I promised I wasn't going to use it, but for ADS CFT people, inserting just one operator here is a way of like creating a state with a certain particle. And this exponential is like creating a coherent state of this bulk field. Okay, so this and that would be the kind of thing that we'd expect to have a classical description. Okay, so this is a class of states in the CFT, and I claim that there are various motivations to think that this might be a class of states where we could represent the entanglement entropies geometrically. Okay, so one of the things specifically about that class of states is that we could just go ahead and actually calculate the entanglement entropies for ball-shaped regions in perturbation theory. Okay. And so previously, at first order, what we had said is that the entanglement entropy, there was this vacuum piece that depended only on this overall constant. And then we said at first order, the change in the entanglement entropy is just determined by the one-point function of the stress tensor. For that class of states that I just mentioned, you can go to the next order, and then the entanglement entropy is, you can kind of express it schematically like this. You have terms that are second order in the one-point functions. Okay. So as promised, the entanglement entropy for that class of states, you can entirely express it in terms of local data. Okay. And then the question is, well, can you take that result and see that it actually comes out of a gravity calculation? Okay. So at this point, I'm going to point out a coefficient that appears here. Okay. So actually, this whole expression is fairly universal still at this point. If I have various CFTs, The only difference between them when it comes to this formula is this thing that was the overall coefficient in front of the ball entanglement entropies. And now there's one new coefficient that shows up in the second order term, and that's the thing that appears in the two-point function of the stress energy tensor. Okay, so that's CT, that's A star. Those are the same in a 2D CFT. In general, they're different. And so first I'm going to mention what happens if they are the same. Okay, so this is what I'm about to say is true for all 2D CFTs and a sort of a large class of other ones. I'm mostly going to state the result. Okay, so the result is that that you can do it. So for any CFT with this constraint, it's possible to show that this answer is actually the area in some geometry. And I'll tell you how to construct the geometry. The geometry is constructed by, you're starting with that first order perturbation. So we calculated the expectation value of the stress tensor, and I previously told you how to calculate a metric perturbation so that the first order entanglement entropy is going to be reproduced. Okay. Well, now I'm going to do the same thing. So in defining these states, we had a bunch of possible operators. This could be the stress tensor, or it could be some other scalar operator, and so forth. So a bunch of operators. I'm just going to introduce some auxiliary field on my ADS that I get from that one-point function in the same way that the metric was obtained from the stress tensor. Okay, so I just introduce all of these auxiliary fields based on the one-point functions in my CFT. And then the claim is that, in order to reproduce that previous formula, all I need to do is satisfy Einstein's equations, where the right-hand side is the stress energy tensor from this matter. Okay. So it's a two-way result. You can show that if I'm able to reproduce the entanglement entropies for those class of states using a geometry, then the geometry must satisfy Einstein's equations with that stress energy tensor. And then the other part of the result is that, this information and this information, these one-point functions are actually enough to construct that geometry. So you see, at least for this class of CFTs with this constraint, and for any state of that particular form, the entanglement entropy actually always is geometrical. And you actually see nonlinear gravitational equations coming out as the equations that constrain these geometries that are calculating the entanglement entropies. It turns out that you could extend this result to any CFT. So this is recent work by Felix and Elliot and Ankar and Charles. If you generalize to some one parameter family of theories of gravity. So if you have one of these other CFTs where A star is not equal to CT, then you won't be able to find a geometry satisfying Einstein's equations that reproduces the entanglement entropies, but you actually will always be able to find a geometry satisfying Einstein's equations with one higher derivative term where you calculate entanglement entropy by the appropriate modification of area. So actually, any CFT, if you're just interested in second-order perturbations and representing the entanglement entropy for states of this type, you can actually always do it using some geometry, and there's always some gravitational physics constraining that geometry. So I'm out of time. Things you could ask me about are, can you learn anything new about gravity, and what would you do after this? Okay, that's good.
And so these additional constraints are really important, right? Because, I mean, otherwise this could just all be in your head, right? I mean, like, if you're talking about the Ising model or something, right? I mean, so it would be really nice. Is there anything you can say about
Yeah, these additional constraints.
Yeah, these
right.
additional constraints.
Right. I mean,
right?
so
that's what tells
okay.
you it's
so
real.
I think it's already interesting. Like even if you are talking about the Ising model, I mean this tells you that you could do some gravity calculation in Einstein plus Riemann squared that will actually reproduce physics of that Ising model if you ask the right questions. But right, it's interesting. These additional constraints are going to be crucial. If I try to keep going, so we talked about first order perturbations and second order perturbations, and somehow, I mean, it was a little bit, you know, depending on your point of view, it's maybe disappointing that this was working so well. Like all we had to have is this to be true, and somehow that was because in this calculation up to this order, all we needed to know about our CFT was like data from two-point functions. Okay. Yeah. When I go to the next order, and I get the next order term in this formula to actually calculate this out, then I'll have CFT three-point functions involved. There are a couple of extra parameters, like in the three-point function of the stress tensor. There are a few parameters that distinguish different CFTs. And then to match Einstein gravity, you'll have to have some relations between those parameters. But I think the really interesting thing is going to be second, third, fourth order.
Yeah.
So at fourth order, then you'll have CFT four-point functions showing up here. And in order to actually match with some particular theory of gravity, then there will be very severe constraints on my CFT, and I would expect that they might connect with other constraints that people have talked about.
I mean, so at this point, though, it seems like that you're not really getting very much mileage out of the entropy, right? I mean, I could have also just said, I'm going to look at the CFT correlation functions in position space and compare to Feynman-Witten diagrams. And then I want to know if those are, what I get is what's going to come from some local Lagrangian with an Einstein-Hilbert term. I feel like you just sort of repackaged this question, right?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know of a similar statement where you can actually like derive that it has to satisfy those bulk equations.
Well, I mean, I think that's roughly speaking what Joe and his collaborators were doing maybe 5 or 6 years ago, where you look at CFTs and then
right.
you say, you know, they should satisfy crossing equation and some large n limit,
right.
and then you try to show that the solutions of that correspond to parameters in the bulk effective action.
Yeah,
and you know, and there's some
I think certainly
preliminary
these things
checks
are,
of that seem to work.
Certainly, these things are related. I think the entanglement entropy somehow is natural in some sense. Just like these ball entanglement entropies, just seem to be a particular question where things work out nicely, where you kind of have as much CFT data as you need to understand the bulk, and it sort of connects with. It's like integral versus differential forms of Einstein's equations.
Yeah.
It just happens that the integral form of Einstein's equation has a nice interpretation in terms of entanglement entropies, whereas you know maybe if you looked at other correlation functions, you get the same kind of constraints, but it's more difficult to actually make the connection.
Does all this break down if you try to go behind the horizon of black holes?
Yeah. So far, this is a perturbative story. So we started with pure.
But we're still ABS. We're still in weakly coupled.
Yeah. So this is not so far allowing us to, you know, say much about that.
Okay.
This particular thing is not, I would say, allowing us to do that.
So it has its limits.
Certainly.
Just to clarify, when you said you're getting the higher order Einstein's equations, so you have basically a term proportional to G Newton coupling gravity to the stress tensor of matter. That's the term you're getting. Are you also getting the three gravitons?
Yeah, you're getting the three gravitons. That's the hard part. So that comes in somehow. This term term you mentioned is needed to reproduce this thing, and to reproduce this structure, you actually need the three graviton coupling in the bulk.
Okay, so it is working at that level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the hard part.
Is it possible to reformulate the Wheeler-DeWitt equation in terms of conditional on entanglement entropy?
It could
correspond to a Randlesian group flow on in the boundary, and is it possible to reformulate in terms of entropy?
I would have to think about that more. It's probably a good question.
Are there any other questions? If not, we'll resume in at 4 p.m. Let's thank the speaker again.